Hi, everyone. I'm Ashley, and I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is August 11th, 2015. So here I am. I was asked to share my story. Thank you so much, Chris, for asking me. This is a real honor. I'm stoked to do this. And I used to love to share my story. I used to go to treatment centers before the pandemic. I used to love to do that, to go to treatment centers and share my story, because rehab is, that's a part of my story. So this is the first time I've done this since the pandemic. So I'm really grateful for Zoom. It is kind of weird doing this by Zoom, but I'm really grateful that Zoom's around. My gosh. But yeah, when he asked me to share my story, I said yes, because that's what I was told to do by my sponsor. If someone asks you to do something concerning service work, you know, you do it. So I guess I'll start off by saying my home is Austin for the last 15 years or so. I actually just moved back here. I moved back to Dallas for a couple of years because that's where I grew up and that's where my mother lives, actually my whole family. And it was quite challenging to leave Austin, because this is my, not just my home, but it's my recovery home, my base, my home base is in Austin. So getting sober here and finding the fellowship, it was really hard to walk away from. But I had about 3 years sober when my mom had a stroke. And, you know, I just really didn't want to move back to Dallas. I have a lot of trauma in Dallas, and it just wasn't cool with moving back. But I decided to put on my big girl panties and just go do it, right? Like, she needed me, and I guess it was just the next right thing. You know, you hear that in recovery a lot, what, you know, do the next right thing, and I felt like that was the next right thing to do. So I'm so grateful to be back, though. I spent 2 years away, and now I'm back, and I was kind of hoping that the pandemic would be over by the time I moved back, but that's obviously not the case. So anyways, that's why I'm grateful for Zoom. I miss my in-person meetings, but I couldn't do this without the Zoom. So, and I try not to focus too much on the pandemic. It is what it is. I'm just staying in the present moment, right? So anyways, yeah, I said I'd never would move back to Dallas. And it's a difficult place for me to be, but you know, I did it for my mom. And I had to face some serious trauma, but it made me a stronger person, right? I realize now that I never would have faced my past unless I moved back. So there I was. I found myself there. I'll just briefly kind of share what's on my plate from then to now, since I already brought it up. Well, actually, let me back up a minute. I've been an addict since I was a teenager. I've had depression since I was seven. I'd say seven or eight, mostly because besides having, you know, a genetic predisposition for depression and alcoholism or some sort of ism, my father abandoned us when I was about two or three, and he left us with my crazy narcissistic mother. And he was an attorney, and he ended up marrying his legal secretary that he was sleeping with after my oldest brother died tragically of a drug overdose. Right. So it's in the family. My dad, I can say that, you know, he wasn't a very good man. So it wasn't really that much of a bad thing that he wasn't around. But financially, I'd say he fucked us pretty bad because he and his new wife weren't really great at paying child support. And, you know, eventually he stopped paying altogether because he was a deadbeat. Right. And a major alcoholic. What was bad, in addition to the financial stuff, is, you know, I had to spend summers with him and his new wife, which was his fourth wife, and she was pretty abusive to me, and I suffered quite a bit at their house as a child. You know, he was never home, and she really hated me, and she let me know it, right? And I finally started refusing to go to Houston for summers with my dad and stepmother, maybe about the age of 10 or so. I just figured 5 or 6 years of abuse was just enough. And I never told my mom why, but she was pretty cool with it. You know, she was too busy crying to me, you know, her preteen daughter, about how shitty and awful he was and how he financially ruined us, which, by the way, it's in my opinion, it's not really fucking cool to do that to a kid. You know, I don't recommend making your kid your friend to dump all your sorrows onto and talk crap about the other parents. I feel like it kind of messed me up, and I had to do some therapy on that. Anyways, you know, stuff got worse when we had to move from Dallas to Jasper, Texas. It's a really small Southeast Texas town. Some of you might recognize the name Jasper. It's a pretty small racist town, right? So I experienced an extreme culture shock, and I discovered what racism and poverty really were, you know, and I struggled to fit in, and that never really happened. So I found the outcasts in that little town, and I smoked a lot of pot, and I did a lot of shrooms, like straight out of the cow shit shrooms, you know, and it was fun-ish. But I couldn't wait to graduate. And as soon as I graduated, I got the hell out of there and ended up going to North Texas, UNT in Denton, just north of Dallas. And I would say by the time I reached college, I was a full-blown addict. I enjoyed alcohol too, but you know, it wasn't really as easy to get as drugs were at the time, you know? And so I partied pretty damn hard in college. I partied so hard that eventually I was yanked out once my family discovered that I was pretty much out of my mind on benzos. Benzos meaning like Xanax and Valium and all that. You all are probably familiar with that. And they ended up doing an intervention, and they shipped my ass off to rehab. My first rehab was La Hacienda. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Laha, which is out in Hunt or near Kerrville or Fredericksburg, out there in the hill country. Anyways, so yeah, that's where I ended up. But, you know, after that, my sobriety didn't really last very long. I ended up engaged after I got out of treatment to a guy I've known most of my life. And he had been a drug dealer, right, when we were kids and young adults. But now he was older, and he had cleaned up, you know. And he was a bar manager at this point, right? So, yeah, we got engaged. I was engaged by the time I was 22. And I really, truly was madly in love with him. He was, you know, he was a good guy, or at least I thought he was a good guy. You know, he was the guy that was handsome and charming and caring, and he always opened the door for me and, you know, cooked for me, taught me how to cook, actually. You know, I'm an addict and alcoholic, and I didn't stay sober. I didn't think I needed AA or anything. So I quickly became addicted to alcohol. And at that point, drugs were off the table. You know, I'd already had the Valium and the Coke and the acid and all that, all the drugs experiences, right? Like, I did the drugs full blast, and I was terrified of going back to rehab. I didn't want to get back on those drugs because I was just out of my mind on those and having 2-week blackouts on that stuff. The first time I had felt completely powerless, you know, like on those drugs, I couldn't stop taking them, and it was horrible, and it was terrifying. And I used to drive to Mexico alone back when you could go to Mexico, right? Without a passport. You just show your ID and you could cross the border, and good Lord. I used to go by myself to Mexico. It was just, I don't know what the hell I was thinking, you know, 19 years old and just drugged out and just needed to get my fix. But, you know, I just kept on doing it over and over, and I'd come out of a haze of like a week or two of just being pilled out of my mind, right? And I thought I was going to die. I just remember thinking, this is how I'm going to go. I just can't stop doing this. I'm either going to OD or something really bad's going to happen to me in Mexico. Nothing really truly bad did happen to me. I don't know how. I got really fucking lucky, I'd say that. So, you know, but I'll admit that going to rehab that first time, going to Laja, it did help me get off of them. You know, I survived, and I wasn't about to get back on that shit. At least that's how I felt at the time, right? Like, I can drink, but it's no drugs. I'm good. You know, and I was in love, and I was engaged to my childhood friend who was a bar manager, and, you know, I was happy to be of age to consume alcohol, you know, as much as I wanted to. At this point, I was 22, so. But sadly, the man I thought I was in, you know, the love of my life, he turned out to have quite the personality change after the engagement ring was on my finger. The booze consumption grew immensely for the both of us, and he became pretty controlling. And when he was really, really drunk, he started to hit me. And that happened two or three times. And I finally just, I couldn't take it. I gave the ring back and I left him. And I was devastated, right? I was devastated. He was tall and funny and just a musician. And he looked like Brad Pitt. If you guys have ever seen Legends of the Fall with the long hair, the Brad Pitt, that's what he looked like, right? He's just hot. And we grew up together, so our families were friends, and it just, he's everything I'd ever wanted, you know, I thought it was meant to be. But when he got drunk, you know, he changed, he became really abusive, and I just couldn't, and I sank into a really deep depression, and I looked for a way to cope, you know, the only way I knew how to cope at the time was, you know, my ism, and My copingism at the time was deciding to date a guy I went to rehab with, right? Because that was a great idea. And he was struggling with heroin at the time, and I really thought that he could move in with me, and I could, you know, codependently save him from his addiction. But it turns out when he was fucked up, he was even more abusive than my fiance was. And it was just nuts. I stayed with him for 2.5 years, and it was the absolute worst time of my life. And I barely survived. I'm not sure quite why I stayed. And I'm not going to really get into that too much, but I'll just say that I think it was just a mix of like Stockholm syndrome, you know, maybe being too embarrassed to ask for help. You know, cause I got a lot of shit when I was in rehab, like don't date someone you go to rehab with. It's a bad idea. So I think I was embarrassed that I had made that decision and it was a bad one, you know, or just the thought that maybe if he left, he would die cause he was a junkie and I thought I could save him. I don't know. But, you know, one night in a blackout, he tried to strangle me to death and he almost did. And I barely got away with my life that night. It was one of the scariest nights ever. You know, it was before cell phones were a thing, and I had a landline, like a cordless, but I remember he ripped the phone cord from the wall, so I couldn't ask for help. And my adrenaline kicked in, and I think that combined with just me having a lot of upper body strength is the reason I was able to fight him off. But once I finally got out of that relationship for good, I mean, I really drove into alcohol to cope. I had just been through quite an ordeal, and I felt broken and completely lost. And I was just over Dallas, right? I just needed a new life. So my best friend was moving to Austin at the time and trying to jumpstart her film career. And she begged me to come with her, and so I did. And so when I say I have a lot of trauma in Dallas, that's what I mean. So it was hard to come back to take care of my mom. But, you know, since then I struggle with relationships. I can't say I do very well with them. I'm working on it though. You know, it's been my past behavior where I pick an abuser or I pick a narcissist. But, you know, if I end up picking someone who's decent to date, I somehow manage to mess that up. So I'm working pretty heavily in trauma therapy on healing my wounds, you know, to see red flags in potential boyfriends. But, and it's been a struggle and quite a learning experience, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, so when I moved to Austin, it was like 04 or 05. And, you know, I was pretty just lost, right? And so I found a bar I could practically live in. You know, I went there directly after work, and I stayed till I was too drunk to see straight, and I'd drive home, crash out, and I'd repeat that process for years. And eventually, I just couldn't handle office jobs anymore because I was just too hungover. I just couldn't handle it. So I became a bartender. And, you know, as a bartender, I had access to all the booze I could ever want. And it was glorious at the time. And, you know, I eventually drank so much every day that I needed cocaine, right, to keep me going so that I wouldn't fall flat on my face while I was working. And it was a pretty stellar combination, I'd say. But when you're on blow and you're not aware of how drunk you are, you know, like, which you all might know about, you know, like the more coke you do, the more alcohol you drink. And then that created this crippling hangover. It was completely unbearable. And weed wasn't really my thing. It just didn't really work out for me for some reason. Weed and I didn't jive. But one of the few things that would help my hangovers, I knew that would help, was my old friend Xanax and Valium, the benzos, right? So there it is. I've got, you know, alcohol, cocaine, and Xanax, like the perfect trifecta of euphoria and the ability to function under the influence and just complete and total fucking misery. It was the combination that helped me cope. It helped me survive. And in the end, it just completely wrecked me. And, you know, I'd say my day started like 8 a.m. swigs of vodka right out of the freezer. And then I'd go to the bar and open the bar and drink a Bloody Mary for lunch and maybe have a couple of bites of food if I could stomach it. Right. And then, of course, cocaine so I could maintain my drunk without becoming too drunk. And then after work, I'd, you know, pound those shots with a double tall vodka soda with lime. I always had one in my right hand. I always had that double tall vodka. Ugh. And, you know, many lines of blow and occasionally crack and then end the night with Xanax so I could sleep through my hangovers. And, you know, these drugs and the alcohol, you know, these were doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I felt confident and I felt fearless and it made me feel like I belonged in the world, you know, when I had been so lost. But, you know, as we all know, it stops working after a while and bad shit starts to happen. And I'd say I finally reached a breaking point during a blackout on my birthday after a river float and just like mass consumption of booze. And a guy I was dating physically attacked me. And when I came out of the blackout, it was bad. I'll just say it was really, really bad. He could have really hurt me and I could have really hurt him. And it scared me enough to go back to AA. And it was the first time I'd been since I was 20 years old. So I got sober and I acquired about 11 consecutive months of clean time. And during that time, I was happier than I'd been in a really long time. You know, I was working the steps. And I was having some, you know, spiritual experiences, I suppose. And but, you know, I had a good sponsor at the time. She was fan-fucking-tastic, but I didn't always take her advice. I didn't really get into the fellowship, as they say. You know, you got to, like, dive in and make friends and do service work, right? And I didn't do that. I ended up just holding on to my old behaviors and my old attitudes. And, you know, I was still working at a bar, right, that I was manager of. And I thought I could handle it. I really did. And, you know, there's actually a part of the big book. I've got it right here. I've got the big book right here. I want to read because this is something that is very true for me on page 84 and 85. It says, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor had been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. And that's the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We had not even sworn it off. Instead, the problem had been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And, you know, that was true for me. And I was able to tend bar for several months while sober. But there's something that's part of that reading that's really important. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition, right? Well, I was working the steps, but I wasn't doing anything else my sponsor suggested. And what happened is life happened. Shit got really rough. Serious stuff happened. My roommate and friend of 17 years suddenly died. 3 days later, my cousin committed suicide, and I had just been diagnosed with a giant tumor in my uterus, and my ability to have children was taken from me, and I had to have a hysterectomy, and I was fucking angry. I was so angry at God, and instead of leaning into my spiritual program, I turned my back on my higher power. I was pissed. And I felt like my whole life was like some shitty joke, you know, or God was laughing at me or he was punishing me for some reason. And I just didn't understand why for the first time in my life I was happy and I was getting my shit together. And then all this had to happen. You know, I felt like personally attacked by my higher power. And I didn't want to do AA anymore. I didn't want to use it to cope. I wanted to drink. So I did. And the book talks about this, that lonely ache, right? That lonely ache that I hated so much that the book talks about, man, it was there the next day. The next morning I woke up and I'm like, oh, along with me realizing that I had left my credit card at the bar the night before. So, and there you have it, right? And it was on. And I stayed out and I stayed drunk for about 2.5 years. And those 2.5 years were pretty much, I'd have to say, the worst 2.5 years of my life. I ended up coming back to AA after I was pulled into a toxic relationship with my boss. He hit on me right after all that stuff happened. I my roommate dying and my cousin dying and the tumor diagnosis. I was just, you know, I was preyed upon. I'll rephrase that. I feel like I was preyed upon by this man, you know. I was completely just out of my mind with grief and anger, you know, like who does that? Who does that? Right. This guy did, you know, instead of reporting him or suing him, you know, my boss hitting on me, like I ended up succumbing to this man and I was sucked into this horribly abusive, toxic relationship, like the worst yet. And it was total fucking rock bottom. I mean, it was bad. And it's like the book talks about, right? We are without defense against that first drink. My ism can show up in other ways. It might not be alcohol, you know. At this time it was a man. Sadly, it was a very narcissistic and abusive man. And because I turned my back on my higher power, I made this man my higher power. And you can't make someone your higher power. Humans are flawed, you know? And because I did that, my life just became a total nightmare that I couldn't wake up from. And I ended up having a nervous breakdown. And I begged God for help. I begged, like sobbing in my room. I remember begging for my sanity and my life back. And, you know, when I quit my job, my boss, he continued to stalk me. You know, it was rough and he just wouldn't let me alone. But my higher power answered. And he put me in front of a therapist in Austin who suggested that I go to a treatment in another state, a rehab in Tennessee, so I could, you know, get healing for all the trauma and the PTSD and get away from this man. And I was really excited to do it. At this point, I'm like, fuck yeah, sign me up. There was a waiting list. I had to wait, but I didn't care. You know, I was ready for the healing to begin. I was done. I wanted help. I just reached a breaking point. And so I did that. I spent several weeks in Tennessee, and we did some trauma therapy, and it was a badass place, actually. It was really peaceful out there. It was a horse ranch. And I remember coming back to Austin, and when I remember when I got off the plane, I took a cab home, and I walked to my house, and I'm thinking, I've got my phone in my hand, and I could call the dude and call the drug dealer, or I could fucking go to Cherry Creek, the 8 o'clock meeting. And I got my ass in my car, and I went to the 8 o'clock. And I called up my old sponsor, and I got her back. But this time I did all the things that she suggested, right? Like, I'll go ahead and start wrapping this up. And with the what it's like now part, you know, I guess I could say, looking back, I guess I could say that, you know, I live my entire life on kind of like a better than or less than basis. And when you live like that, right, like you're better than or less than, for me, it means I'm never a part of. And that time that I had 11 months where I wasn't participating in the fellowship or service, you know, I knew that had to change. I knew I needed to truly become a part of. Because anything that encourages separation is fatal to me. And they say personal recovery depends upon AA unity, right? So I know I have a spiritual malady that encourages separation, but I know that the fellowship promotes unity, right? And I know I can't do this alone. I just can't. And, you know, the steps are even laid out that way, right? We admitted. We came to believe a power greater than ourselves. We made a decision to turn, you know, our lives, our will in our lives over, continue to take personal inventory when we were wrong. We promptly admitted it. You know, we carried the message to other alcoholics and practiced these principles in all of our affairs, right? I didn't pay attention to that the first time. But this is a we program. And it clicked like, oh. I got to do this like fully, all the way. And so I took all of my sponsor's suggestions and I did all the steps. And I realized that back when I was angry at God, it wasn't God, right? It was just, I didn't lean into my program. Life just fucking happens. And when shit gets bad, I can't wallow in self-pity and go, oh, poor me. Because people are going to die. It's bad. It's going to happen, and people get sick, and job losses, and you know, financial hardships. But the thing is, I understood that I had to start leaning into my program when times got tough, right? So that's what I did. I can't separate myself from the group. That's deadly for me, and I pray that I won't ever do that again, because life is going to get rough. You know, and selfishness and self-pity and anger and fear, those are my enemies. And the malady that I have, the malady that I have, it feeds off of those things, right? And I have to work daily to remove them. And my higher power makes that possible. Left to my own devices, I can't do it. You know, the spiritual malady, I just can't do it. But in, you know, working the steps and working with my sponsor and working with other alcoholics and doing all the service work I can and cleaning house and, you know, giving back what was given to me. It's the key to my survival. I get that now, right? It's the way to enter peace. It's the way for me to be calm enough to learn how to live sober. You know, and alcohol and drugs gave me what I needed to a point where it just wouldn't work anymore. And it turned out to just give me loneliness and misery in the end. And I don't want that in my life anymore. And, you know, I've got 5 years sober now, and it's not easy But I know, zombie, I'm almost done. It's not easy, but, you know, it's doable. You know, as long as I show up every day and do what my sponsors suggest, like, it's okay. It doesn't overwhelm me. I'll give you guys an example. The last 2 years, you know, I just moved back to Austin in August. And it was last year, I lost 7 people, including my dad. There was a guy I was dating in Dallas, and he was tragically killed on his motorcycle. Then I kind of latched on to my best guy friend. He was my best friend at the time. And we ended up starting to date. And he ended up breaking up with me the day of my father's funeral, kind of out of nowhere. You know, cause I sometimes pick sick people, you know, and, but you know what? It's okay. You know, that relationship pushed me to dive into my therapy more and see what's going on. Why am I picking the same people to date? You know, the last year was just, I had 7 people, like one of my closest friends, she drank herself to death. I was there in the hospital the day before she died, holding her hand, you know, when her liver and her kidneys and everything failed. It was agony, you know, 7 people last year, it was agony. But I knew that I couldn't turn my back on my higher power. I leaned into it. I leaned into my program. And I went to meetings and I worked with my sponsor and just did everything I was told. And it got me through, you know, it got me through. I didn't drink. There were a couple times, I'm not going to lie, there were a couple of days where I'm just like, oh, fuck, you know, but my higher power showed up every single time. Like, I remember thinking one day, I was so weary with grief. I just didn't think I could handle it anymore. And I remember thinking, I'm going to take a nap. And if I still feel this way when I wake up, I'm going to just go to the bar. And I took a nap. And when I woke up, I was like, oh God, I still feel this way. This is awful. But then I looked at my phone, I grabbed my phone and my sponsor called me. And she never called me, right? I was the one that called her. And she called me and she said, you know, I feel like I needed to reach out to you. I don't just had this weird feeling that you weren't doing so good. And, I was like, oh my God. So we met up immediately. And, I know that was my higher power showing up. I'm kind of going to tear up thinking about it. I was just like, wow, this is real. Like, this is real. You know, my higher power is real. And, I'm so grateful I didn't drink. Cause my God, I just applied for Texas State. I'm transferring. I want to be a therapist. I know if I drink, everything that I've worked so hard for in the last 5 years would be gone. I have no doubt. And like I said at the beginning, these Zoom meetings have saved my ass. And it sucks that, you know, I miss the fellowship, but my higher power is like, what I'm doing is sufficient is what I'm saying. Like my higher power, I still get that connection when I go to Zoom meetings and, I still work with others. I do what I can for service work. And, I'm just insanely grateful, that I was given this gift to try again, to have another shot at life. And, I guess that's all I can say really is my life is pretty damn good today. And I have bad days, but you know what? That's okay. Like I get through them, you know, they're fleeting, you know, I might feel emotional or depressed or whatever, but those emotions go away. You know, I've learned how to meditate and sit with them in sobriety. And, if they pass, you know, if you sit with them and just let them pass, you know, it's cool. Like I can handle whatever, I feel like I can handle whatever life throws at me today. And so, and it's all because of this program. So thanks so much, Chris, again, for letting me share my story.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you, Ashley. Great job.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Hi, Sophie.